standing by. Welcome to the Immigration Press Hall conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance at any time, please press star followed by the zero on your touch-tone phone, and an operator will assist you. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Mr. David Fernandez. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. First off, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. My name is David Fernandez, and I'm the Communications Director for the Florida AFL-CIO. With the Senate voting yesterday to bring the Gang of Eight bill to debate, the national movement in support of a common-sense approach to immigration reform is rapidly gaining momentum throughout the nation and here in the state of Florida. Together, the majority of Floridians have called for a bill which includes for a fair and compassionate pathway to citizenship for the nearly 1 million undocumented currently in the state. Our first speaker on the call today is going to highlight the economic and social struggles of those nearly 1 million. She is the research associate at the Research Institute on Social and Economic Policy and a professor at Florida National University, Cynthia Hernandez. Cynthia?
Thank you, and hello, everyone. I'm really happy to be here on this call to discuss this really important and timely issue. So let me just dive right in by briefly giving you a research and statistical context of immigrants in Miami-Dade County and in Florida. So immigrants are a massive part of Florida's workforce. In fact, immigrants comprise almost one quarter of the entire workforce of Florida. Their workforce participation varies greatly from industry to industry, but certain sectors of the state's economy rely very heavily on immigrant labor. So it's a no-brainer that immigrants contribute more to Florida's economy than they cost. In fact, immigrants are the backbone not only to Florida's economy, but really to our country's economy. And they are essential for our state's economy to remain competitive on a national and global level. And yet, many immigrants are living in poverty. They face horrible working conditions and are in constant fear of having their families torn apart through deportation. So just to provide some stats, according to the census data, 22% or 18.6 million of Florida's residents can be qualified as poor, in deep poverty, or near poverty. This evidence points to a general systemic failure in Florida to reduce poverty that was compounded by the Great Recession and a slow economic recovery. Among Florida's most vulnerable to poverty are non-naturalized foreign-born immigrants. This includes the nearly 1 million undocumented immigrants living in Florida. This population is disproportionately more likely to be poor because they face considerable levels of economic insecurity stemming from socioeconomic constraints such as wage theft or limited access to living wages, lack of access to much-needed social services for themselves and for their families, all of this coupled with the risk of having their head of household deported. So in Miami-Dade County, which has the highest population concentration in the state and the largest hub of immigrants, we have found through our research that 61% of immigrants who have been deported from Miami-Dade County are either low-level offenders or not guilty of a crime in which they were arrested for. So by ICE standards, only 18% of these individuals ordered for deportation represent high-priority public safety risks, and that number actually drops to 6% when we apply local standards suggested by Miami-Dade County Public Defender. So for example, using Miami-Dade County Public Defender standards, immigrants driving without a driver's license shouldn't be deported. The implications of our findings in Miami-Dade County suggest that these are the trends that are occurring throughout the entire state of Florida. So these issues raise some serious questions for our local and state economy, hoping to attract businesses and employees to grow. And so while considerable research has been done to measure the economic impact of not passing a comprehensive immigration bill throughout the country, little is known about the economic implications of not creating a pathway to citizenship for Florida's economy. The implications of our research findings suggest that the effects of not creating a pathway to citizenship to Florida's workforce and not passing a comprehensive immigration bill are far-reaching. So not doing so will disrupt and tear apart honest and hardworking families and make Florida's economy less profitable, less competitive, and less viable. This is especially dangerous in a state that has nearly 1 million undocumented immigrants, and in Miami-Dade County, where the majority of the population is immigrants, approximately three-fourths are immigrants themselves or children of immigrants. So a solution to Florida's pervasive poverty and deportation problem that immigrants face is to pass a comprehensive immigration bill so that immigrants have access to higher education, which will result in better quality jobs with benefits and higher income, all of which helps Florida and the country's immigrants out of poverty and more importantly, leads us to an economy that is more competitive and viable on a national and global level. So in 2013, our communities in Florida and our country really needs to be more inclusive and united in recognizing that all people will be better off if we fix our immigration system. Workplaces across the country and our state will not only be fairer, our communities will be safer, and more importantly, less people will be living in poverty, families won't be torn apart, and our country will just be more just.
All right. Well, thank you for that insightful information, Cynthia. Really highlighting the direct impact on the individual. Faces of Florida is a new campaign by our coalition, Fight for Florida, that is looking to gather real and personal stories from those directly affected by our current broken immigration system. And here to really put a face of Florida, if you will, and to share his story of personal struggle is a student and president of Students Working for Equal Rights at Florida National University, Nicholas Wolf. Nicholas.
Hello, everyone. I'm really happy to be on this call today to just share my story, my struggle, and not only represent me, but all the undocumented people living out there, not just in Florida, but in the whole United States. So I guess I'll start off with my story. I was born in Colombia with my twin brother Esteban, and my dad, he left the family before I was born, and my mom, being a single mom, she couldn't find work in Colombia. So when I was two years old, she came to the United States, and she worked here immigrant jobs, just cleaning houses, babysitting, being a nanny, labor jobs, and she was sleeping on her friends' couches, trying to save up as much money as she possibly could. She did that for 3 years, and when I was 5 years old, she had saved up enough money to get us our plane tickets and to rent a small little townhouse here in Miami, Florida. So a couple days after I turned 5 years old, I came to the United States on a tourist visa. It was me, my twin brother, and my grandma. And then I remember when I first saw my mom at the airport, I didn't really know who she was because she had left when I was only about 2 years old. So at first I was kind of scared of her. But as time went on, I realized that this is my mother, and I came to the U.S. to be with her. So we were supposed to be here for only 6 months because that is what tourist visa allows you to be here in the U.S. for. But when it was time to go, my mother and my grandma decided that they didn't want us to grow up without a mom and a dad. So we decided to stay here in the U.S. in Miami with my mom. My grandma, she had to go back. So then at first it was just me, my brother, and my mom living here in Miami, Florida. And then she had to work long hours. She worked 12-hour days most of the week. So then one of my aunts came from Colombia so she can watch us at home while my mom works. And at first it was okay. But then the rent, it went up, and she just couldn't raise us on a minimum wage job, working 12-hour days, 15-hour days, coming home. I used to only see her on the weekends because she worked so much. And then when I was 7 years old, we were about to get kicked out of our house because my mom, she wasn't making enough money for us. So then one of my uncles from Colombia, he decided that he couldn't let that happen, so he actually moved from Colombia to the United States, also on a tourist visa, to help my mom financially and to help raise us here. Unfortunately, he moved here to help my mom out, so he also overstayed his visa, and he also ended up becoming undocumented. And after that, both him and my mom, they were working steady jobs. And then with him helping pay the rent and the bills, we were actually living a little bit more comfortably than before. So from the ages between, I guess, 7 to 14, I lived a regular life like any other American kid, like growing up, hanging out with friends, playing sports, et cetera, until it came time for high school. In high school, in 10th grade, I took driver's ed, and I passed all the tests. I passed the entire class. So I went to the DMV so I can get my actual license so I can drive. So I went over there with my mom and my uncle, and I passed all the tests. And when it came time for me to get my license, they told me that I wasn't able to because I was missing my social. And back then, I was about 14, 15 years old. I didn't know what that was or what it meant. So then I asked my mom, and she told me, like, yeah, you're undocumented, and things are going to be a little bit more difficult for you in the future. But at first, I thought, I'm only in 10th grade. I'm only 15 years old. By the time I graduate high school, something either in Congress will get passed, the DREAM Act might get passed, or I will be able to get my green card, my papers somehow. So at first I didn't think that it was such a huge deal. But as time went on, I realized that I wasn't able to get a driver's license, so I couldn't drive. I wasn't able to apply for a job, so I couldn't help my mom out with the bills or anything. I was basically stuck in limbo. And when it came time to start applying for colleges, I didn't think that I would be able to go to college because undocumented students, they have to pay out-of-state tuition, and I'm not eligible for financial aid or most scholarships. So all that against me, it felt like I was just going to graduate and then end up working like a minimum wage job somewhere, or I didn't really know what was coming up for me after high school. I was actually pretty scared and pretty anxious, because once I graduated from high school, I didn't have anything to look forward to, anything to work towards. But my mom, she used to always tell me, just try your hardest in school, try to get good grades, try to get a scholarship so you can go to university for free. So I listened to her, and I was a good student in high school. I ended up graduating with a high GPA, and I qualified for Florida Bright Futures Scholarship. I got that scholarship. I got a track and field athletic scholarship, but because of my status, I wasn't able to claim those scholarships. So once I realized that, I thought, like, all the hard work that I had put into school, getting good grades, making sure I was out of trouble, doing everything that I was supposed to, that if I was a resident or a citizen, I would be going to school for free. It felt like all that was a big waste. But during my senior year, something happened with my family, and I was able to get some help financially from a family member. So me and my mom, we decided that we're going to use that money only for education. So me and my brother, we started going to Miami-Dade College, and our plan was to take between one and two classes a semester only, so that we can see if the DREAM Act passes, so that we don't spend all that money in one shot, because each class in Miami-Dade College was over $1,000. So I spent almost 4 years getting my two-year degree, and I paid out-of-state tuition that whole time, and my brother as well, so that was a significant amount of money. And then while in college over there, I found SWEAR, Students Working for Equal Rights, and I found out that it's an immigrant rights group that it will not only benefit me, but it can also give me the chance to help other people that were in my shoes, not knowing what's in the future, stuck in limbo, and in the press because they have so much potential, but they aren't given the opportunity to excel, whether it be in academics or in whatever field they choose. So I ended up graduating from Miami-Dade College, and then I was able to come into FIU with a special in-state tuition waiver, which allowed me to continue my education. And I am currently a student at FIU. I started 2 semesters ago, and deferred action was another huge step in the in the immigrant rights movement. It passed almost exactly 1 year ago. It passed last June 15th. So thanks to DACA, I can now legally work. I can now legally drive. I can help my mom out with the bills. I can drive her around places so that she doesn't have to drive places with a suspended license. And I can just, it just feels that I have more freedom, that I can live a regular life like I've always wanted to, not having to be scared that a cop might stop me at the bus stop, or that a cop might stop my mom because she's driving late at night, or also like little things like not having to take a two and a half hour bus ride home, where I can just drive for half an hour. So every little thing counts. Right now I'm just saving up. I'm working a summer internship for the UAW, and my plan is to save up enough money, as much money as I can during the summertime, so that I can continue my education here at FIU, because the money that I had saved up over the past few years is already gone. So to continue my education, I have to work for it, and that's what I'm currently doing right now.
Thank you, Nicholas. Nicholas' story, passionate and personal, but it's a story that we're hearing over and over again, highlighting the importance and the necessity to pass a comprehensive immigration reform bill that helps these individuals who are here by no fault of their own, and just looking to continue to be thriving members of society and work here and build in our economies. The next person we have on the line is Congresswoman Frederica Wilson. As the debate heats up in the Senate and a vote comes closer, all eyes are going to soon turn to the House of Representatives to follow in the footsteps of the Gang of Eight and pass a reform package that benefits all workers. And here to bring that perspective from Washington, D.C. is Congresswoman Wilson from the 24th District in Miami. Congresswoman?
Okay. Thank you so much, and thanks to everyone who are listening. This is the civil rights move of our generation, and we're fighting every day to make sure that we can make comprehensive immigration reform a reality. This is very, very personal to me, because I represent one of the most immigrant-rich districts in America. I represent Miami-Dade County in the north, all the way down to Brickell. And then I represent southern Broward County and all kinds of immigration issues come through my office, so I'm very proud to represent my immigrant-rich district and to help them. The people that we're discussing today and the people that we're debating are dear friends, and some are even family to me. My family immigrated from the Bahamas. In this process, I'm fighting in particular for the dreamers, the young people like Nick, who came to this country with their families to have full legal protection. This has been a passion for me since my time in the Florida legislature. When I served in the Florida Senate, each year I would sponsor the Florida Dream Act. But it would always pass the Senate, but we could not get it through the House. There's reasons for hope on immigration reform, and we have to maintain that hope, because this is a human rights issue as well as an economic issue. In fact, it's a necessity. One of the best things we can do to create jobs to do what the Senate is doing now, passing immigration reform. And I truly feel that the Senate will pass the immigration reform. When we bring undocumented workers in from the shadows, we boost wages for all Americans and we create jobs. And that's why I was sent to Congress, to create jobs. And every single day, I remind my colleagues that all of us are responsible to create jobs for our constituents. A recent study by the Center for American Progress shows that granting legal status to undocumented workers would create up to 159,000 jobs per year over the next 5 years. By empowering undocumented people to earn higher wages, immigration reform will enable people to spend more money on food, clothing, housing, and other purchases. This strengthens the American economy, builds our tax base, and creates jobs. Immigration reform is not only about justice, it is about jobs, jobs, jobs. Now, maybe you should know a little bit about what's happening in Congress, because there are 565 people here that will make this crucial decision about immigration reform. And I just feel that we have to stay on message and make sure they understand that this is about justice, it's about human rights, and it's about what we are supposed to do as members of a democratic society. Yesterday, the U.S. Senate voted overwhelmingly, 84 to 15. They voted to begin debating and amending the bill that passed the Judiciary Committee last month. So that was a big step. It was a huge step because it was a large vote. House Republicans, however, that's where my fear is. I am afraid that they will continue on this fast track because this is an urgent bill. This is not something that we need to take a long time on. We know the causes. We know the reasons. We know the personal stories. I am sure every member of Congress has had a visit from someone on this immigration bill. So what is happening, just the other day, House Republicans voted to end President Obama's important effort to stop deportation of people brought to this country without documentation. And I'm fighting to make sure we can keep families together. I'm fighting to save the diversity program, which for years has ensured that people from underrepresented nations, including many in Africa, can come here to contribute to our economy and seek a better life. I'm fighting to ensure people with temporary protective status have a clear pathway to citizenship. I convened an immigration forum the other evening, and I invited three members of Congress to come to Miami and sit with me to inform our community. During that forum, a young man said to me, "Congresswoman Wilson, my father is in a detention center in Broward County, and he's going to be deported at 4 o'clock a.m. I looked at my watch, and it was 9:15 p.m., and I said, "Why didn't you tell me sooner?" And he said, "We just found out. We just found out." So I dismissed the conference, and the Congress people and I went off to dinner, and throughout dinner, my office staff was making calls to ICE. And we finally got through, found someone who would answer the phone. They passed me the phone. I spoke to the gentleman. I told him, "This is about children. This gentleman has four children. He has a wife, and he's from Mexico, and he's in prison. You've got to let him out. Please, this is a human issue. This is a family issue." And he listened so contently, and the next morning, I got a call that they or we will have come up with some parts of the bill that can help people like Mr. Rivas and his family so they won't be separated. And so, like you, Nikki, you and your family won't be separated. So we're hoping that this will continue. I had another forum on Monday night, and two families were there. And we're working with those families right now, the Diaz family and the Godoy family. They're all from Mexico. Children are involved. The fathers are in, these fathers are in Crone, which is in Miami-Dade County, Florida. So this is something that happens to all of us on a daily basis. I am sure that whatever we can do in my office, you can be assured that we will be fighting for immigration reform, because this is a moral issue. This has to do with families. It has to do with jobs. It has to do with children. It has to do with human beings, and these people we must be so concerned about. While you hear on TV, people are discussing immigration reform, but no one really knows what's going to happen. Everyone knows probably how they want to vote, but we cannot predict how this will turn out. I personally can see this bill passing the Senate, and when it comes to the House of Representatives, I'm going to fight and work as hard as I can to make sure that it passes the House of Representatives. The Democrats in the House will vote for this bill. The Republicans, they need a lot of work. Need every single person on this call to contact all of the Florida members of Congress. Let them know how immigration reform is affecting your community, and let them know how you want them to pass immigration reform. You know, Florida is an immigrant-rich peninsula. We have so many people who are immigrants. They're living in the shadows. They're suffering. They're not receiving the appropriate pay. They have no health care. They're just, and it's wrong. It's morally wrong. So you call, it is a necessity. Trust me, I have been in touch with the people in my particular district and most of the representatives from my part of Florida. They support immigration reform, even the Republicans. So it's up to Central Florida and North Florida so that we can deliver the appropriate votes for Florida, so that we can stand up and say, Florida makes sense. Florida understands that this is not a time to play with people's lives, to play with people's futures. This is a very serious, serious decision, and it's a very serious bill. So thank you so much for including me on this call. If you have any questions or concerns, you can always call my office. I have five offices, and you can always get in touch with anyone in my office. We are trained and ready to work for comprehensive immigration reform. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Congresswoman, for your insightful comments and all your great work that you're doing in D.C. as well as in Miami. This is going to conclude the call. I would like to ask all of our speakers to please stay on. And moderator, if you could please open up the conference for any questions from the media for our speakers.
At this time, we'll now do a question and answer session. If you have a question, please press one star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. If you'd like to withdraw your question, star followed by the two. And if you're using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to lift the headset before making your selection. Again, that's star one to ask a question. One moment. And our first question comes from the line of Danny Paro with WYOD Miami. Please go ahead.
everyone. This one is for Congressman Wilson, Congresswoman Wilson. Obviously, it seems like you are pleased with the progress in the Senate, but there are other, there's a kind of like a parallel effort going on in the House as well. Have you seen the kind of if you will, what's being discussed among that group of representatives that's putting this bill together, and what do you think about it?
Well, the Gang of Eight in the House, I do have conversations with them, and one of them is from Miami, a dear friend, Mario Diaz-Balart, and he's very optimistic. He feels that he can rein in his conservative members, including some members of the Tea Party, to join in with the Democrats who can vote for this bill, and we can squeak it through. So that's his take on it, and that's what is coming out of that particular Gang of Eight.
And just to follow up there, is there the kind of progress that's going on that front? Are we far along there, or is there still a long way to go before all of that is developed?
I think the linchpin happens to be border security. I think that the part of Miami that we live in, where WIOD is, they're not thinking of that particular part of the country. They're thinking about the southern border of Mexico, where we have California, Arizona, Texas. And they're thinking that this will increase immigration if we do not secure the entire border, put many boots on the ground, and dogs, and electrify the fences. These are some Tea Party people's suggestions. And if we waited for that to take place, everyone who's alive today will be dead, because that's how long it would take for us to fence off Mexico from the United States of America. So it's unrealistic. So with unrealistic kinds of ideas, those are the people that we can cross off the list. Those are the people that you do not even try to change their minds. So what you have to find is you have to find people who are logical thinkers, people who you can convince with a few conversations and some statistics. Those are the people that the Gang of Eight and all of the Democrats are working with and hoping that we can get them on the right side of history.
Thank you, Congresswoman.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions, please press star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone, and you may need to lift your headset before making a selection. One moment. And I'm showing no further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us on the call today, all of the speakers, Cynthia Nicholas, Congressman Wilson. I really appreciate your insight on this. If you'd like to follow up with any one of our speakers today, please feel free to contact us at 850-570-9953. We'll also have a press release with quotes from all the speakers and the audio to this conference call on fightforflorida.com. Thank you, everyone, for being on the call.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the Immigration Press Hall Conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. And we're now back in the private speaker room.
All right. Who's still here?
I
anyone?
Yes.
All right, cool. Well, yeah.
Thanks.